These abilities are real. These realms are real. These intelligences are real. And our capacity to connect with all of this is real. So, do we hide from this reality out of a fear of the unknown? Hey everyone. Now, before we jump into the topic of this conversation, just want to make everyone aware that I've recently been demonetized on YouTube. I will be able to reapply for monetization on the 26th of November, but until then, YouTube has turned the tap off in terms of being able to make advert revenue, which was quite a significant portion of my income on a monthly basis. I've had a really amazing outpour of support from people via PayPal, Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, contributing to try and help me get through this short little process of demonetization on YouTube. And I just want to say thank you so much to all of you that have already donated and given what you can. It's really much appreciated. Anyone else who's able to do that to help support my work whilst I kind of navigate through this brief period of demonetization on YouTube, that would be much appreciated. They didn't give me a solid reason why I was demonetized. It was apparently a copyright infringement, but they didn't specify the video. I tried to reappeal and they denied my reappeal. So yeah, that's my situation right now. But I am really excited to get into this conversation with you today. Biohacking consciousness and alien contact. You know, I think some of the biggest so-called secrets of humanity are not actually secrets. They're just marginalized so intensely and for such a long time that they're just automatically dismissed as foolish by the average person, whether this be paranormal behavior or psychic phenomena, UFO experiences. The psychosocial conditioning has been generationally ingrained into our heads that these are topics to be laughed at, that these are not serious inquiries whatsoever. And so the secrets are open secrets, but the way in which the information about these issues filters down into the public reinforces a state of ridicule and disbelief. And it makes it very difficult to have this conversation and still be considered a rational person, even if you posit this from a more scientifically orientated position and less so the spiritual or mystical. It's still a difficult concept for the uninitiated to grasp, but it's also very important to me. So important that I've dedicated years of my life to researching the possibilities, and that's because I speak from experience. I've seen things that most people do not see, things that I know many of you here have witnessed yourself, hence why we gather together in these spaces to find a level of solidarity with others who understand what it's like to be given some form of a glimpse beyond the thinly veiled curtain of what we call reality. My reality was changed in every way when I had four profound experiences involving orange orbs of light. These orbs arrived over my skies on four separate occasions within the space of about a month during the summer of 2019. During one of these events, which I've spoken about multiple times in greater detail on my channel, three orange orbs of light flew across the sky, froze instantly at high altitude above my property, and began to gradually descend towards my house, slowly rotating around each other as they did this before finally freezing roughly 2 to 3 feet above the roof of my house. Now, these events all took place during times when I was purposefully outside in my back garden, entering into a very simple, untrained meditative state by calming my breathing and clearing my mind. And from this position of stillness, I would begin to formulate my ideas about reality, thoughts about cosmic and universal consciousness, desires for me to have interactions with those that understand these possibilities, and with an emotional and intellectual resonance operating symbiotically. I was visualizing that these thoughts, these ideas, these intentions, and these emotions were, in a sense, flooding out of me, emanating from me, resonating through space, through time, through reality. And when I had those rare moments of slipping into what was almost a trance-like state of deep consciousness, that's when anomalies would occur. And it's during these moments of sublime coherence that I had my personal experiences with these orange orbs of light. Now, I've spent a lot of time giving these experiences deep consideration. How could this happen? Why is it possible? What are these orbs? And I'm in no way asserting that I've stumbled across the answers to these questions, but I do believe I'm starting to find myself orbiting closer and closer to a more refined understanding of how our consciousness can interface with aspects of reality and how this function of ours is capable of facilitating these strange forms of rudimentary contact. There are some key concepts that we're going to cover today that I believe outline the fundamentals in biophysics and quantum mechanics through which these non-local communicatory pathways can be opened up from within the mind itself. By leveraging our own organic technologies that exist down on the microcellular level, technologies that interface with quantum fields and may play a key role in how consciousness expresses itself in humans. I think the most important truths we're going to see coming into clearer vision as we move through our developmental adolescence as a species is the realization that we truly are energetic beings, the energy of which can interact with the wider architecture of reality on a quantum level, perhaps a sub-quantum level, at a fundamental level. We are intrinsically connected to all things. This is going to become so much more obvious to us as a species, as our sciences and our technologies develop to a level of sophistication that begins to reflect the sophistication of our intuitive mind and our ability to transcend classical barriers to experience wider domains of information, what we might call the Akashic Records or the Unified Field. What we think of as magical or pseudoscientific in relation to consciousness and its wider potentials is, in fact, cutting-edge biophysics. We are such a phenomenally complex and highly energized system. Our electromagnetic output is incredible. Every single cell in your body produces electricity. And with this realization comes another more disturbing one, that our society, as multifaceted and complex as it is, at its root, has been established with a framework of models, whether these be scientific, social, political, economic, a framework of models that has allowed for the continuing restriction of our own perception, channeling our cognition into narrow corridors where your life is essentially boiled down to consumerism, labor, and taxation, and life itself, on a fundamental level, is boiled down to matter, coincidentally expressing itself by accident through a fleeting byproduct of neuronal complexity before snuffing out forever. Now, these models that have been injected into our minds from the moment we entered into the institutional education system and the wider system of control that we're all a part of, these have all played a fundamental role in stunting the growth of expanded consciousness modes. We're now having to catch up to the ancient wisdom of our shamanic ancestors. Only now are we discovering the components of the body that could facilitate so-called psychic abilities. Only now are we developing models through our methods of science that are beginning to touch on the intuitive insights gleaned from sages and seers, exploring higher dimensional realms through biologically induced interfaces. The organic Einstein-Rosen bridge was traversed long before scientific modernity adopted the role of the modern-day soothsayer. Are we better off? We have a lot of gadgets to play with, we have a lot of food to choose from, we have a lot of movies to watch, we can travel more easily to far-off places, we're connected globally to everyone with an internet connection. But are we happier? Are we better off? Has science and the pursuit of technological development been a net positive for humanity? Well, we are full of toxins and microplastics. We are bombarded with high-frequency waves and radiation. We develop cancers faster than any indigenous tribal population. We have neurodegenerative diseases that didn't exist before the 1960s. We're full of anxiety. We're tribally divided across political and social lines. Wars are waged at genocidal scales and then live streamed onto social media to turn a profit. So I ask again, are we better off? Are we happier? Would we be happier if we were wandering the forests, naked, in communion with nature, connected to planetary energies and harmonies? I mean, I know that I wouldn't want to live like this all the time, but is that because I'm indoctrinated into this system? Is that because I am reliant on my phone and my social media and my credit card and my nicotine? Is it because I'm so used to having a wide choice of foods and other pleasures that I don't need to hunt for, don't need to gather, don't need to build? Even if all of this is actually contributing to an earlier death, is it the convenience of mass convenience that keeps us enslaved? I think it would be a shock to the system. But I'd like to think I'd be able to adapt to a world that was integrated back into these natural harmonies, but I'm under no illusion that the illusion hasn't ensnared me. If you say otherwise about yourself, I think you're being dishonest. We are all ensnared in varying degrees of intensity, whether you're completely plugged into the matrix or you just survive within it whilst fighting against it, you're still reliant upon it to one degree or another. But I'm kind of digressing. Let's get back into the science. I don't want to get too complex here, mainly because I'm a layman myself. I can't articulate a fluent language of science, but I also think it's important to listen to your intuition and your own experiences, especially if you have experiences that relate to these ideas. And recently, I've been drawn towards a component of our bodies that may, in fact, be the hidden key to unlocking answers on these extremely profound and existential questions surrounding human consciousness, what it is, and what it's truly capable of. So we're definitely going to talk about microtubules quite a bit during this talk because the studying of this cytoskeletal architecture in the human body has now become a focal point around cutting-edge models and hypotheses in consciousness studies, especially when discussing the potential for non-local modes of consciousness, which is the often dismissed realm of psi abilities, precognition, telepathy, remote viewing, etc. So microtubules are these cylindrical polymers that are composed of tubulin dimers. They play a really crucial role in various cellular processes, such as cell division, intracellular transport, and structural integrity. But recent research, especially done by Roger Penrose and Stuart Hameroff with their orchestrated objective reduction theory, suggests that microtubules may also act as quantum biological structures, capable of supporting coherent quantum states. Now, each tubulin dimer can exist in multiple quantum states, and it's believed that under the right conditions, these dimers can exhibit quantum superposition, simultaneously existing in different conformations or different states. If the quantum states of these dimers become phase locked within a network of microtubules, quantum coherence could emerge across large sections of the microtubule structure, facilitating highly ordered behavior at the quantum level. And remember, at the quantum level, things are usually chaotic and unpredictable. Something appears here, then it appears there. It's not easy to create coherence in the quantum field. But they believe that our microtubule structure may actually be able to facilitate this type of coherence and sustain it. And this is what might open the door towards precognition, telepathy, and other so-called psi abilities. You can kind of look at the microtubules as your biological computer network, and that this network is also capable of connecting into a deeper network of information from within the unified field itself, or the quantum vacuum, or the Akashic records, the source point of all energy and information, however you feel comfortable defining it, that thing. And it seems pretty clear that highly intuitive and highly creative people often refer to this connection into the unified field as a flow state. And that's exactly what it is. It's a state of consciousness that's allowing information to flow through it with minimal resistance from the normally loud, chattering mind we have on a day-to-day basis. And when profound information filters down from the unified field into the cognitive matrix of the human brain, when we're in these flow states, it can cause what we call eureka moments, a sudden onset of profound realizations or intuitive actions with no discernible origin from within the person who appears to be receiving the information or committing the action, whether this be a philosophical realization or a scientific breakthrough or even just the perfect guitar solo. This is the flow state. Like a biological antenna, we open ourselves up to these wider signaling and receiving capacities by entering into deeper states of consciousness. And deeper states of consciousness are facilitated by the microcellular components of our body becoming activated. And these become activated by our own intentional processes. Processes like meditation, trance, chanting, dancing, and yes, even the introduction of psychoactive substances. These actions appear to manipulate key elements of our body, like the microtubules that become stimulated into ordered directives when these modes of consciousness are being attempted, that deep state of meditation that you can slip into where it no longer requires effort. That is when your microtubules have been sufficiently activated, the biomagnetic tissue is self-organizing, your default perception is closing up whilst the aperture of higher consciousness is widening, allowing higher than normal amounts of stimuli to be experienced. So there is a biological functionality involved. It's not just a woo-woo spiritual magical state of being. It's a fundamentally transformative phase shift of your biology, your neurology, and your overall perception of reality. So this can't be undervalued because we're starting to see the potential evidence of our own abilities becoming more solidly defined by scientific modernity. This is a critical threshold to be crossed for our human evolution. It's my belief that sufficiently deep states of consciousness where default neural chatter is fully silenced, meaning that chattering mind, that constant talking mind has been silenced, these are states capable of opening a form of quantum wormhole aperture within the body. This transient wormhole, on a biological level, allows the normally isolated microtubular information exchanges within our body to instead tunnel on a quantum level, quantum tunneling, through higher dimensional curvatures. And if microtubules are responsible for perception management for our own state of consciousness, then our state of perception will shift from local to non-local, exploring and exploiting information within these realms. And more importantly for this talk, potentially interfacing with intelligences that reside within these 5D plus topologies. This was also discussed by the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences in conjunction with the CIA when they were looking deeply into the psychic sciences. Monroe Institute was interested in testing the development of psychic abilities, and the CIA, bankrolling the efforts, were of course more interested in novel methods of clandestine intelligence gathering. Because if you can retrieve critical intel from the top left drawer of an office in Moscow without having to send an operator into the field, but can instead just be meditating next to some aloe vera plants in your office in Langley, this is a massive strategic advantage. But it would seem, at least for the most part, efforts to corrupt these spiritual sciences in order to benefit the military intelligence complex often resulted in remote viewing operators developing anti-authoritarian mindsets and a subsequent refusal to participate in psychic black ops. The Monroe Institute developed the lamp versus laser interpretation of consciousness, viewing our default mode of localized interactions and environmental stimulus as a lamp mode of consciousness, an ambient, localized glow that diffuses into the surrounding noise, not spreading out very far, just your localized energetic glow, a little lamp wandering around. And then on the other hand, focused consciousness, where default neural chatter is suppressed, and biological components on the subcellular level, like our microtubule architecture, kick into action and begin to unify into a singular orientation, a singular directive, provoked by the deepening of your state of consciousness, the silencing of your chattering mind. This is considered the laser mode of consciousness, where it is capable of piercing through or tunneling through dimensional states into higher dimensional geometries, more complex dimensional landscapes, even sending a biophotonic discharge in the form of an extra dimensional beacon, which we will talk more about. This state of consciousness, the laser state, is the modern way of saying samadhi or kundalini or any of these other ancient terms for states of consciousness that our oldest ancestors not only participated in long before modern science arrived to prove it, but they seem to be masters of these inner abilities and control over normally automatic responses in the body by cultivating these deep transcendental states of consciousness through shamanic practice that invokes neural chemical changes through harmonics, through vibration, psychoactive plant activation of dormant neural nodes. These are the ancient sciences we're only now beginning to bring into clearer focus through our tools and technologies. What does that say about us in comparison to them? Who was more advanced, really? An interesting side note is recursive feedback. Now, a good example of recursive feedback can be demonstrated here, where a camera's output is fed back into itself as input. This causes the input to cascade into a geometric fractal feedback loop that goes on infinitely. This is a very important thing for you all to understand. You do this as well. You do this as well. But you are not a camera devoid of sentience. You are a conscious being. And so when you observe your inner world, when you turn your output back in on itself as input, you also drop into a dimensional well of abstraction and fractality. In strong enough experiences, whether this is transcendental meditation, a near-death experience, or a sufficiently strong psychedelic, you will see the fractal geometrics unfold and take over your visual perception. During lighter meditative states, these geometrics that are encoded with profound information may not make themselves visible, but the information that they are made up of can still move through you, filter into your cognition, and provide you with those eureka moments of intuitive insight that we're often referred to as downloads or flow states. Our ability to induce a coherent recursive feedback loop is our ability to essentially unfold our own inner dimensionality. And if reality is in some way holographic, which it seems to be the deeper we go into the substructure of our realm, then within each of us, within each speck of anything, the entire structure is collapsed within it. All information that can be information is compressed and enveloped down into a dense state within each compacted aspect of energy that forms the space-time construct. And so within you is the entire universe and all knowledge within it. Unfolding this knowledge requires practice, and that's why our ancients cultivated sophisticated techniques using harmonics and tonality and psychoactive agents, recursive repetition of mantras, chants, dances. They even built temples that harmonically were engineered to bring on these states of consciousness. These were the tools they used to unfold this higher dimensional aspect within us. Biophotons are another fascinating element of this conversation, especially when discussing this potential quantum signaling capacity of our consciousness. Now, I believe my own experiences with these anomalous orbs of light may have been facilitated by the enabling of these subtle quantum coherent states that can arise in the body. Through silencing the mind and forming extremely intentional thought processes or thought forms, which may also translate to much higher than normal biophoton emissions. Now, just so that we're all on the same page, biophotons are basically these ultra-weak light particles that biological organisms, including humans, produce and emit. These photons, or these light particles, are produced by biochemical reactions within the cells, and so in a default mode of consciousness, going back to what the Monroe Institute said about lamp versus laser, this lamp model of consciousness becomes even more apt when you consider our biophotonic emissions as a dim glow around your body. But can these emissions be strengthened? Can they be intensified? Can they be turned from a lamp into a laser? I think they can, because again, if the microtubular architecture is essentially able to quantum tunnel into higher dimensional states of information fields, and microtubules also emit biophotons, which they do, then when you're making very precise requests or statements from within your consciousness whilst entering into these meditative states that are inducing quantum coherence within your microtubules, this may also lead to not only an increasing of biophotonic emissions from the microtubules, but because these meditative states actually seem to phase lock this architecture, meaning that they all start orientating towards the same directive, the same behaviors, the same action potential. Perhaps through this mechanism, you can actually charge this architecture and release a concentrated burst of biophotonic energy. And if you can do this by visualizing your thoughts and your emotions are being projected from you, then you can encode this biophotonic laser with intentional information. And if you can do this, then you can choose to encode this photonic info burst with a message for contact, for communion, for assistance from the universe, whatever it might be. And perhaps something receives it, perhaps something responds. Well, it happened to me on multiple occasions. And so this could very well explain how intelligences beyond our dimensional manifold are able to then interface in some format with you, with your consciousness, through a form of entanglement, a form of spooky action at a distance, as Einstein called it, leveraging your microtubular information channels in a non-local state, piggybacking on these quantum tunneling energies and imbuing these energies with a message that launches itself through various degrees of dimensionality. And I think this is also why grounding your message in a profoundly strong emotional resonance of love, of positive emotion, charging these non-local microtubular information bursts with powerful emotional protection. It's this process that I personally believe ensures your message arrives at benevolent doorsteps. Not too dissimilar to a warning I received from a national security agent, if you're going to fire messages off into the ultra-dimensional ocean, you should probably do your best to protect that message as best you can to make sure it gets to the correct address. Or you might risk potential interception from pirates on highly uncertain waters. There is a risk. That can't be ignored. When discussing these practices, there is a risk. But I do think the risk, whilst it should be acknowledged, should not deter us from unfolding our most powerful spiritual biophysical potentials. These are the tools that will catapult our evolution if we are brave enough to step into these realms together with love on our side. These abilities are real. These realms are real. These intelligences are real. And our capacity to connect with all of this is real. So, do we hide from this reality out of a fear of the unknown? That's not what our ancient ancestors who constructed the pyramids, or Göbekli Tepe, or Newgrange, or the Hypogeum, or Chavin de Huanta, they didn't do that. They embraced these tools, refined them, advanced them. Is that what we should be doing? Yes, there is a risk, and you should not engage in these practices with fear in your heart. But this is the next voyage. It is the new area of the map that needs to be explored. I think it's a part of our human destiny, part of our future, and a part of our origins. More now than ever, we so desperately need solutions. Perhaps the expanding of our inner worlds could relate to transforming our outer world, because ultimately, it would seem there is no difference between the two, other than your perception of it.